You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The following is a presentation of the Belly Up Sports Media Network.
Here's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove podcast. We got an NFL trade to discuss. The Final Four is about to tip off. Major League Baseball season is in full bloom. And, well, we got some NASCAR things to discuss. That's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove podcast.
From Belly Up Sports and the Belly Up Podcast Network, you're listening to the Sports Stove podcast with your host, Vince Stover.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up in me?
Welcome in to an all-new edition of the Sports Stove podcast presented by Righteous Felon Jerky. Now's the time to join the flavor revolution, and you can do it at righteousfelon.com. Use the code STOVE15. You're going to get 15% off your purchase. That's STOVE15 to get 15% off your purchase. Thank you for tuning in to tonight's edition of the Sports Stove Podcast. I'm your host, Vince Stover, joined as I am every Wednesday by my dad, Dale Stover. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Doing good. We're, like I said, we're in full swing with lots of sports going on here. Some wrapping up, some starting, and we got more playoffs coming in a couple weeks. So, lot going on.
A lot happening right now for sure. When you look at the sports world, with the NFL draft right around the corner, college basketball season is winding down. Major League Baseball is starting up. There's a lot of things happening for sure. So we're excited to talk about it tonight, and we're going to start in the world of the NFL because there was a big trade today. The trade happened just this afternoon where the, let's see here, Stephon Diggs, who had been talking about seemingly for the last year and a half leaving the Bills, gets traded to the Texans for a second-round draft pick is the way I understand it. And, Dad, I look at this two different ways. Let's start with the Bills and the predicament this puts them in, or at the very least, the great need that they have now at wide receiver when they enter in the draft later on this month.
Yes, I was looking at that. I think that definitely probably changes their need. Again, this is a good draft for wide receivers, even though they are a little later in the first round. There are still several and, of course, could have some even drop to them there, but you would think that's what they would be looking at. The Bills are an interesting team because they really, you know, should have been dominant the last couple of years and haven't been able, you know, to get to the Super Bowl. And I've some people say their window is starting to close. So, you know, we will see. They've got a quarterback is what you need in the NFL, and they definitely have the quarterback. They, you know, they've set up with a good defense there. So, and Diggs was not happy there, you know, was not fitting in at this point with them. And so probably the trade, you know, makes sense. They get a second round pick. I think they gave up a fifth or a fifth and a sixth, something like that, or a sixth and a seventh.
I think it's a fifth and, this year and a sixth the next year.
Yeah. So they, you know, they will gain that second round pick, which again, definitely could, you know, help them there, even in the wide receiver market also. So next year, I think they'll be, be in good shape. You know, Houston, boy, they seem like they've really made moves here in the offseason to continue to, you know, bolster themselves. And I think Diggs, I mean, that could be a great addition, you know, for C.J. Stroud, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you know, the Bills, the second round pick isn't until next year. So it's a 2025 second round
pick. Oh, okay.
It doesn't even help them this year necessarily. Now they've got a bunch of dead money cap space, you know, which we've seen with the Russell Wilson cut, those kinds of things too. So a lot of dead money for sure. You know, you talk about the window closing. To me, when you talk about a window closing, the first thing you look at is quarterback. And the window isn't closing on Josh Allen. Now it's closing on the coach, and it's closing on you know what they're doing, and they're running out of time to prove that they're the ones that can do it. Josh Allen, on the other hand, you know, I mean, I'd say he's in his prime right now. And so I don't think the window's closing on him. I'm curious, though, to see what they do. There's a couple guys out there in free agency or guys that want to be traded. T. Higgins, of course, comes to mind. And then Brandon Ayuk is another guy that comes to mind, although I think San Francisco's locked him up and plans on keeping him around. But at the end of the day, it leaves the Bills, who were, I think, the clear-cut best team in the East. Now it puts them right down there with the Dolphins. And in a battle for that East division right now. The Texans, on the other hand, Dad, I absolutely love what they've done last year and so far this year. Last year, they go out, they hire a really good coach. They draft a quarterback and probably a little lucky because the rumor has it they would have taken a Bryce Young if they had the number one pick. They take whoever's left, and that's C.J. Stroud. That turns out really well for them. They built a good young team last year at young receivers that were playing really good football. The team played well. Now they go out and get Joe Mixon running back. They go out and get Stephon Diggs at wide receiver. And they're still going to be drafting guys too. I love what Houston's doing. I think they're the favorites in the South, Dad. Jacksonville was probably that in many people's eyes. But we already knew Houston was coming for it, and now it seems like when – they've gone all in already, and the young C.J. Stroud here.
Yeah, I think Houston, like I said, will be the favorite. Going in again, should be a real battle there with Jacksonville. But Houston, like I said, they've made really good moves, and you know, I think they have so much momentum, you know, with the coach and just the way they were able to perform this year, and then adding talent, you know, it should only help. So.
Do you feel in the South, AFC South, you got Houston, Jacksonville, Indianapolis, Tennessee, all of them with young quarterbacks, all of them with a ton of potential. That being said, Dad, if Anthony Richardson's healthy, I feel like Jacksonville and my confidence level falls behind Indianapolis. I like Houston 1, Indianapolis 2, Jacksonville 3, and then Tennessee at 4, at least for now. Jacksonville has the talent. They just haven't been able to really put it together consistently, which has been really discouraging because, again, quarterback, they got a good running back. They had some good receivers. The defense was good. They got a Super Bowl winning head coach. And yet, man, they looked really bad at times last year.
No, they did. They did. Indianapolis, like I said, we'll see if their quarterback is healthy. Of course, they've got a good running back. I think they have a good new coach. To me, they're still going to have to convince me a little bit there. I think Houston did convince me last year that, you know, they're competitive there. I have always, you know, liked Indianapolis fine. I'm not sure they're there. You know, Jacksonville, if they continue to fall off, that'll be a surprise because they've got talent, they've got coaching, and, you know, last year they were the favorites, and this year they're not, you know, necessarily. So, you know, they should come into the season ready to go. And, it could be a three-team battle at the top. And Tennessee's got a new coach. I think they've got a good coach there, and they'll have some new life. You know, whether they've got a great quarterback, I don't know. You know, they have a different running back now. I would think it would take a little while for them to kind of get settled in and stable there, but we'll see.
Who takes the fall in Jacksonville? If they have another bad year, is it Trevor Lawrence's fault or does it fall on the coach? Meaning not who do you think is at fault, but who do you think they will blame Will they get rid of the quarterback and move on, or will they fire the coach and grab a new coach?
They'll probably fire the coach because I think, you know, Lawrence is I don't think there's a question about his ability, you know, the way he's come on early. But again, that coach has got a good pedigree, and I like him too, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many years, and I like Trevor Lawrence fine. I don't know how many years you can give him before you move on. He shows flashes of talent, but last year he threw 21 touchdowns and 14 interceptions. You know, he threw for 4,000 yards, but the 14 interceptions at the amount of experience that he has, that has to get dropped drastically moving forward. He did run, let's see here. He's not, they're trying to keep him healthy, so he's not running a ton. I'm looking to see if I can find his numbers, and I can't right now. So anyways, something to keep an eye out on. Trevor Lawrence ran for 339 yards, so not a whole lot last year. Four touchdowns. He also had five fumbles. So that's over or almost 20 turnovers last year for Trevor Lawrence. If that doesn't get cleaned up, Dad, I think you start hearing the rumblings of maybe it's time to look for a new quarterback. You know, maybe you still use Trevor Lawrence as your bridge, but you're getting ready to pay that guy a lot of money. You want to make sure you're set in with what you got versus, you know, maybe what you see in the draft as a possibility. Speaking of the draft, Dad, I keep hearing Drake May's name come up as a fit for a whole lot of people. At Washington, you know, Dan Quinn's the head coach. He had success with Matt Ryan, and Drake May fits that mold better than any other quarterback in the draft. Look at New England. You know, there's something about him that seems to fit there. Minnesota, again, he fits that mold of the West Coast offense or the Shanahan offense. I guess that's not the West Coast offense, but the Shanahan offense and seems to be the kind of guy that can run that. You know, it's hard to tell because people talk right now. The information they're getting typically is a little bit of smoke. They're trying to get some people off the scent of some things. And that being said, you know, how much can we take into what we're hearing about Drake May coming up? I'm curious to see, Dad. We've heard a lot of stuff 2 weeks ago. It was all about J.J. McCarthy. This week, it's all been about Drake May. You're not hearing Jaden Daniels. You're seeing him, you know, mocked as the number two quarterback, but you're not hearing his name a whole lot. Really, the arguments now have been, you know, are coaches going to like J.J. McCarthy more, or are they going to like Drake May more? Do you think that's because everyone's just assuming Jaden Daniels is going number two, or do you think that maybe we're going to see Jaden Daniels drop in the draft a little bit?
Well, you know, again, with it being time a few weeks before the draft, this is kind of normal, you know, different quarterbacks getting different hype from there. I will agree with you. I've heard Drake May a lot more, you know, this week. You hear his name coming up more, you know, McCarthy, people are you know, pushing him, of course, Daniels being the Heisman Trophy winner. I think it just depends. Again, I don't think, you know, it depends if you have any movement there trade-wise, which you could have with New England. Otherwise, you know, the quarterback thing might kind of get set because there's not any, you know, value. Washington's not going to trade out of that pick, I don't believe. So, you know, at some point, you know, it may come clearer who they are definitely looking at. But, yeah, May's name has become, you know, it was real popular early in the year, you know, before the season ended, you know, that he was kind of the number two. Then all of a sudden, you know, Daniels won the Heisman. And I don't know for sure your feelings about McCarthy, but I still scratch my head a little bit with the idea of him being one of the top three, but maybe he has the ability to do it. And again, you know, somebody that comes later on down the line, you know, there's going to be, you know, Bo Nix, a couple down there, you know, the guy from Washington. So Penix. So we will see. At this point, I kind of think it's just a normal talk, you know, people trying to make noise, and build up. You know, I think when we get to draft night, I don't know that there'll be any surprises in the first four quarterbacks taken and what order they're in, but we'll see.
So my thoughts on J.J. McCarthy is he has not proven what his ability is, at least during games. So that being said, the coaches, you know, Jim Harbaugh, of course, has been talking him up. People seem to, the interviews seem to be going really well. I'm not confident in saying that he shouldn't be a top three quarterback, but I'm not confident in saying that he should be either. I like winning quarterbacks. I like quarterbacks who win in college. So I like the Georgia guys and I like the Alabama guys. And I was big on Deshaun Watson coming out. I'm saying the guy has won so much in college. How would you pass on him, Chicago? And thankfully they did. But, you know, those kinds of things stand out. Well, JJ McCarthy's team won, but he wasn't the reason why in most cases. Now, he was also not the reason why they lost. He did his job and he did it well. He did what he was asked of him. And so I'm careful because I haven't, you know, I don't know him. I haven't studied him or anything like that. But just from the outside looking in, I don't look at him as a top tier quarterback. I see him as a guy who can be a Gardner Minshew in role in the NFL, a guy who can be a backup, solid backup, and or even, you know, maybe even a Jimmy Garoppolo, something like that. He's not going to win you the Super Bowl. He's also going to get you to the playoffs. He's not going to make the mistakes and he's not going to ruin it for you. So if he gets in the right system, but that's for every quarterback, right? If he gets in the right system, yeah, well, then maybe he has a successful career. But if he gets put on a team that doesn't play to his strengths, then, you know, the chances of him being a bust, I think, are really, really high. There's only a few quarterbacks in this world who could go into any system and be successful. And by few, I mean literally only a few, a handful of guys. And I think you're looking at the guys like Brett Favre, I think, fits that mold. I think Patrick Mahomes fits that mold. But I don't know that the Joe Montanas and the Tom Brady's do. I think if you put them in the wrong system, you don't ever hear about those guys. So there's only a few guys that can rise above a system. And I don't think JJ McCarthy is that guy. They say that Caleb Williams is. But I don't think that JJ McCarthy is. And so for that reason, you know, it would just have to be the absolute right fit. And I think a Minnesota, San Francisco, even though they're not going to draft a quarterback up that high, those kinds of guys, the Shanahan mold, Los Angeles, you know, the Rams, those kinds of people make sense for JJ McCarthy. But I mean, you know, you put JJ McCarthy on the Panthers, he's not going to win you games. You know, you put him in Tampa, he's not going to win you games. I don't know. You know, if for his sake, I hope he lands in the right spot. But I'm not sold on JJ McCarthy as of yet. And maybe he ends up being the first round version of Tom Brady and becomes phenomenal and wins Super Bowls and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I don't see it. That's for sure. All right, let's transition, Dad, to the big sporting event of the weekend, the Reese's All-Star Game for NCAA Division I, being played in Phoenix on Friday. The one and only Isaiah Cozart, a friend of the show. He's been on the Sports Stove Local Hour many times. He'll be playing in the All-Star Game Friday night in Phoenix, which leads up to the Saturday Final Four, which is the, you know, the subpar event following the Reese's All-Star Game. No, the Final Four this weekend in Phoenix, Dad, two number one seeds are still in it. Then a number four seed and a number 11 seed. I've watched a lot of basketball games in this tournament. I am so excited for this UConn-Alabama game, and I am so uninterested in this Purdue-NC State game. So let's start, though, with UConn and Alabama. We like Nate Oates. We're cheering for Nate Oates. I've never cheered for Alabama in my life, but I am cheering for Nate Oates and excited for him and the opportunity he has in Alabama. But Dad, UConn has looked like the best team in the nation this whole tournament. I mean, UConn looks so tough right now.
Yeah, I watched a game, of course, a lot with Illinois because I was for Illinois, and boy, you know, Connecticut just dominated them. So, you know, if they play like that, I don't know that anybody can challenge them. On the other hand, you look, you know, they did not go undefeated this year. So it's not like, you know, they can't lose a game there. But, boy, they have really looked impressive in the tournament. They looked impressive, very impressive against Illinois. You know, Alabama, again, you know, a number four seed, but has played well. Be interesting to see if it is a, you know, if it is a good game. You know, if Alabama upset them, that would really be something, no doubt about it. But again, I think Nate Oates, you know, is a good coach, and I think he'll have them ready to play. It just depends, you know. Boy, like I said, Connecticut has really looked good when they're rolling.
Yeah, they are. They lost two games in December, game to Kansas by four. They lost to Seton Hall by 15 back on December 20th. I was not following UConn basketball at that time, so I'm not sure what was going on or how in the world that loss came about. But that was a big loss, a surprising loss for sure. And then they lost to Creighton by 19 points back in February on my birthday, February the 20th as well. So they are beatable, but they've only been beat three times. Two of the games they lost, they got torched in as well. But I'm telling you, the way they've played in this tournament, Dan, they have looked so, so good. Going back to the Big East tournament, they beat Xavier by 27. They beat St. John's by five. They beat Marquette by 14, I believe that is. And then in the tournament, they beat Stetson, which was a 116 game, by 40 points. They beat Northwestern by almost 20, and they beat San Diego State by 30, and they beat Illinois by 35. So this team is – or 25, excuse me. This team is just – I mean, they're just blowing through teams right now. But they get a little bit of time off, and maybe these few days off will bring them back down to earth. And Alabama is a defensive team. They know how to play defense. They play hard defense. I'm intrigued by that game, Dad. I feel like UConn's the team to beat right now, but I am intrigued by it. UConn is, by the way, 11.5-point favorites in that game. Purdue and NC State, Dad. If it wasn't for NC State, I probably wouldn't even turn the game on Saturday. I don't know. I'm intrigued by this 11 seed, even though you're not your traditional Cinderellas. They've kind of, I don't know, I guess gained the hearts of the people, and people are excited to see what NC State does. And I feel like people don't like Purdue. I feel like they don't like Zach Edey, and they don't necessarily enjoy watching Purdue play. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Purdue and NC State?
Well, I think NC State is a great story for March Madness. Anytime you can have a team, you know, it's kind of an underdog, but like I said, they're an ACC team. They got hot in a tournament, and I think that's a great story, for March Madness. I'm a little bit of a Big Ten fan, so it's easier for me to be for Purdue. I think Purdue is really good. And I think if you had Purdue and Connecticut in the final, you would really have quite a matchup there. I don't think there'd be any doubt about it. Again, NC State has been such a surprise so far. I think that'll kind of run out this game. I think Purdue will probably be able to handle them, but we'll see. You know, there's four good teams, four teams that have had a shot at it. And like you said, you know, NC State is not your traditional underdog because they're not a small unknown school. And, you know, anybody that's older and remembers basketball remembers when they won upset Houston. I guess it was in 83, they said there. But I remember watching that when that happened, and quite the thing there. So anyhow, but I think Purdue, you know, they've been solid all year, have played well all year, and I think they're in the spot they wanted to be in. So the two number one seeds, I think, have to be the favorites, but I don't know that either of the other two teams getting in would be a total shock.
Yeah, NC State's been on this run in the ACC tournament. They beat Louisville, who's a horrible team, but they only beat them by 9. They beat Syracuse by almost 20. They beat Duke by 5. The big game was the Virginia game. Virginia had them and blew it. They ended up beating Virginia in overtime. That sent them into the championship game against North Carolina. They beat them by 8. In the tournament so far, they beat Texas Tech by 13. They took out Oakland in overtime. Oakland was looking like they were going to be the Cinderella team this year. NC State then beats the number 2 seed Marquette and then beats Duke again, which, again, everyone in the world loved that. So they beat Duke, and now they face up against Purdue. I'm cheering for NC State and UConn. I think that'll be the most entertaining game of the bunch. But I am also got a piece of my heart cheering for Nate Oates, even though Alabama refuses to let him come on my show. Again, another reason to dislike Alabama, but that's okay. You know what? If you don't want him on my show, fine. We don't want him on my show, but no, I'm kidding. We'd love to have Coach Oates on the show. You're welcome anytime, Coach. If you ever move on from that horrible place called Alabama, you can come on the show and we'll talk all about it. Major League Baseball started up this week or last week, Dad. And it's been a lot of fun to get things rolling. Some, you know, big name players have yet to get going. I'm intrigued, Dad. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but Joey Bart, who was supposed to be the next great coming of catchers behind Buster Posey in San Francisco, never turned out. They DFA'd him this week and ended up trading him to Pittsburgh. I don't know how much you followed Joey Bart or your thoughts on him, you know, and probably most of our listeners could care less. Any thoughts on Joey Bart getting DFA'd and ultimately traded?
No, I mean, he definitely didn't make it. You know, I thought last year he had a shot there, but he didn't. And that's the way it is. Sometime maybe he'll get another chance and do better. But, you know, he's definitely not Buster Posey, which nobody's probably going to be for a while there. So, you know, we'll see. But like I said, it's been a great baseball season so far. Been some surprises early, but it is early. So, you know, been good baseball.
Don't bust their bubbles yet. Two undefeated teams still remain in Major League Baseball as of this current recording of this show. The Detroit Tigers and the Pittsburgh Pirates are the only two undefeated Major League Baseball team. Dad, are you looking forward to the World Series between the Tigers and the Pirates?
That would be exciting. No doubt about that. I don't think you want to buy your tickets for that quite yet, but both teams, I know you weren't as high on the Pirates. I think they were better last year. I could see them doing better this year. And the Tigers, everybody did think they were going to have a better year. So, but, you know, whether that'll continue or not, I don't know. I was looking at the standings here a little bit ago, and the other surprise, I heard a baseball show the other day talking about the worst teams in baseball. And one of the worst teams in baseball is 4-2. And second in their division. So the Angels have been a little bit of a surprise here so far.
Yeah. Well, one thing that baseball fans will understand and learn is that you don't get to play the Marlins every game all season. so the Angels are getting ready to learn that. But no, I've been impressed with the Angels. You know, I've actually talked about fantasy wise, I thought Trout was going to be a top 10 outfielder again. I thought there were some things that could turn out okay for Los Angeles. But after starting off on the two game losing streak, they took care of business against the Marlins. And you talk about worst teams in Major League Baseball. Right now, I'm all in on the Marlins being the worst team in Major League Baseball. 0-7. They look so bad. They are actually kind of entertainingly bad. Dad, they've got some entertaining characters on that team. That being said, my goodness, they have not looked good. The Mets have yet to win a game as well. And everyone else has at least won one game. But I'll tell you what, the White Sox look really bad. The A's always look bad. And the Rockies look bad also. But Miami, Dad, looks really, really bad so far as well. So there's, again, it's really early. Things will come along. We'll figure some things out. I've been happy with the Brewers so far. They did lose today. Got a chance to listen to that game while I was at work. You know what, we're going to see and learn a lot about these teams, over the next couple of weeks. And I think within two more weeks, we'll kind of know what we're dealing with. Generally speaking, how are the spirits in Cincinnati area right now, Dad? Cause the Reds had a lot of hype coming into the season. Of course, they had a big injury right before the season started, but, 3-2, not horrible. Also not great.
No, I think everybody's still optimistic going into it. Like you said, they're 3-2. It's early in the season. I think they've played competitive so far. So definitely no doom and gloom here in the Cincinnati area at this point.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. You know, right now there's a few teams on big win streaks. The Red Sox have won four straight. The Tigers have won four straight. The Angels have won four straight. The Pirates have won five straight, and the Dodgers have won three straight. The Cubs have won three straight as well. So a few win streaks going on right now. I think, you know, we're already seeing that there's going to be a few competitive races. I loved the atmosphere for Atlanta and Philadelphia in their first series. It was an electric atmosphere. The Yankees and Astros atmosphere was really fun to watch as well. So there's plenty of things going on, but Boston, Dad, as surprising as Los Angeles is at 4-2, Boston is kind of in that same boat, being 5-2 to start the season. And again, it's not like they started with the hardest of teams. They had the Athletics this week that they were playing. So that definitely helps, but they beat the Mariners also. So I don't know. I'm intrigued to watch how that AL East turns out. Right now, it looks like it's the Yankees division to run away with.
Yeah, like I said, the Red Sox have been surprising so far, but they have played easier teams. And we'll just see. You know, I think it'll be a close division with the teams, maybe even all five of them. So we'll see.
All right. Dad, anything else you want to cover before we say goodnight to you?
No, that would be fine. Like I said, you know, football keeps being a lot of interest in that big trade today. And as we're building up toward building up toward draft time. So definitely we have a lot to talk about these next few weeks for sure.
Yeah, NFL draft coming up soon enough. Next week we'll be recapping the NCAA tournament championship. And we'll continue to look at NFL draft things, actually dive probably more into that as well from there. Well, Dad, we're going to get to our NASCAR conversation coming up next. Always thank you for coming on and being a part of the program. And we'll talk to you very soon. But before we get into our NASCAR segment, we want to mention, again, Righteous Felon Jerky. Make sure that you follow. Oh, let's, here you go. Good. Billy Witt brings it up. We better talk about it. Dad, you mentioned it on the phone earlier today. Are we going to talk about the women's tournament at all? I said, probably not. But it has garnered interest. You know, once EKU didn't make the tournament, I kind of bowed out overall. I know you kept up with MTSU and whatnot from there too, but do you want to give any words on the women's tournament so far?
No, again, it's been exciting. You know, Caitlin Clark has definitely turned around the women's game there, as far as people being interested, wanting to watch her play. Again, you know, your mom and I have watched quite a few ladies games this year, and a lot of us because she really likes to watch Caitlin Clark play. So, you know, we'll see how the Final Four goes there, but definitely it's changed the women's game, and there's definitely more popularity. We'll, you know, maybe talk more in the future to see if we think that'll carry over to the WNBA or whatever. I've never been convinced about the WNBA, but, you know, she sure turned things around for college, so we'll see.
Yeah, and I think it goes further than her. I think the LSU between the coach and a couple of the players there have helped. South Carolina has been fun to watch as well. It's been more than UConn, and I think that having more than UConn be good in women's sports, as especially women's basketball, has been an important part of that there. And Billy brings that up too. The South Carolina women are extremely formidable. I agree. And having Coach Dawson there, I mean, it's helped, no doubt. No doubt about it. All right, Dad, we're going to say goodbye to you. We're going to switch gears to fantasy. But first, a quick word from our sponsors at Righteous Felon Jerky.
Say hello to America's most wanted craft beef jerky. Over 15 flavors with all kinds of character. The number one jerky gift box and all natural black Angus quality made right here in the U.S. of A. Taste the flavor revolution at RighteousFelon.com. Use the promo code STOVE15 at checkout. That's RighteousFelon.com. Promo code STOVE15 at checkout.
It's now time for our final segment of the show. We like to call the Sports Stove Final Lap. Joining us tonight to talk all things Richmond and Martinsville. He's been with us once before, and he's back again. The one and only Caleb McChesney from Belly Up Sports and the NASCAR side of Belly Up Sports especially. Caleb, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I caught a little bit of your baseball segment at the end there, talking about my Red Sox there off to a hot start. Yeah, we'll see how long that continues. You said we played the Athletics and Mariners, so how much stock can you really put into it? But
let me ask you this. Did the Red Sox jump the start before the zone, or do you think they're the real deal?
Red Sox fans are certainly jumping the start a little bit here. Let's pump the brakes here just a little bit. Let's see what happens when we get into our in-division rivalries. But I guess we'll dive right into what happened on Sunday.
Exactly. That ties us into Denny Hamlin getting the win. And I'm sitting there watching, and I didn't see it when it happened, of course, like everybody else. Waited till they went back, because they're sitting there saying, why is Truex so mad at everybody? It didn't seem to match Truex's character at all. And it just seemed like something was going on. And then afterwards, you know, they talked to him and he says, you know, Denny jumped the start, then he ran me up the track. And you know, then Denny says, well, he's talked to him now and everything's good and whatever. But NASCAR admitted that he jumped the start and said, we just didn't do anything about it. So what are your thoughts on how all that went down?
So I'm probably going to have the unpopular opinion here. Surprisingly, as you know, an Alex Bowman guy and not the greatest relationship with Denny Hamlin, I actually really like how he handled the situation post. I think he laid it all out fantastically. I went in, I watched Actions Detrimental for the first time ever. I'm like, okay, I might as well go check it out. I don't hate him as much as I used to. I wouldn't even say I really dislike him anymore. It's more of a respect, truthfully. But as far as that restart, I don't think it was enough to just be like, oh yeah, we need to call this back, revoke the win from Denny, give it to Joey Logano, which probably wouldn't have been any better, because it was really Truex's race won. I don't know if you saw me mention it on my three up, three down, but actually, that might have been on the picks that haven't come out yet. But I said something along the lines of, I had the race basically won, my first win of the entire season, picking Truex. I had it for about 200 laps and just gone. But no, I don't think it was enough of a jump for me to be like, yeah, no, this is heinous. This is gross. I've seen NASCAR make dumber calls and letting that restart go. Did Denny jump it? A little bit. I think he explained it pretty matter of fact in this podcast, like talking about, hey, these guys are hanging back here. They forced my hand a little bit, and that it all just kind of ended up how it ended up. And Truex was kind of slow coming up to the restart too, which also probably had an effect.
I liked Junior had Hamlin on the Tuesday show. I loved the conversation they had, because Junior was just kept saying, no, man, you got away with it. You got away with one. You got away with one. Like, Junior just kept talking about the fact that Denny was wrong, but he got away with it, and that's fine. And he took a chance, and it worked for him. And he wasn't saying he should have had his win revoked or anything either. I was intrigued. I'm always intrigued by Junior's take on things, because I know that he has the ear of NASCAR. And
no, that's going to basically be the popular opinion for the rest of the. For the rest of the conversation about it is what Dale Jr. says.
You're right for sure. Alex Bowman, let's talk about him real quick, because I picked him. He was on my fantasy team this past
week. I didn't tell you to do that.
No, you did not. But I had him in there, and for a while it looked good. And then it didn't. It wasn't horrible, but I know I was watching, you know, I said this on Twitter, where I felt like the manufacturers were as even in this race in Richmond than they've been all season. And I think there was about four, I said five on Twitter, looking back on it, probably about four solid cars from each manufacturer that ran up there in the top 12, top 14. And I don't know. I was intrigued by how even, I guess, it was at the end of the day.
No, it finally seemed like Ford had something together. I faded Joey Logano last week, and then he goes and gets runner up. So it looks like Team Penske's finally got two cars, as usual, that run really well. Brad Keselowski has finally figured out something. I mean, this is on every short track that we've been on, he's in the top 10 at the very least. And then Buescher's been consistent all year. Blaney had a bad Richmond. He was on my down, but it's one race.
Yeah.
No, Ford finally seems like they've figured something out here, but maybe it was just Richmond starting out on those wet tires and you know, wet weather tires, excuse me, and just having kind of a different playing field before they go to the slicks and everything kind of changes up. But no, it is definitely a great sign that Fords seem to be finally competing. Shout out to Josh Berry, by the way.
Yeah, Chris Brentz told us last week, Josh Berry, this is his kind of track. He's a good one to play.
I was hesitant, but no, he made a believer out of me. He was on my up.
I had him on my roster until qualifying, and I took him off. I was like, oh, man, he's way in the back. Stuart Haas Racing is just
second highest climber of all Sunday behind Chris Trebell.
And he went fast, too, really fast to get up there. That being said, I've been really intrigued so far this year on strategy races. And I feel like we got it at Bristol, and we got a good bit of it in Richmond, although ultimately that faded once the caution came out later. But I like watching guys try to figure out strategy. To me, that adds to the race. I don't know if everybody loves watching that, but for me, the race is interesting if there's a strategy involved with it. How did you like everything with the tires from the beginning, starting with the wets, going to the slicks, all that kind of stuff? And yeah, I don't know. I thought it added to the race this weekend.
I'm of the what seems to be the popular opinion that I wish that NASCAR, instead of enforcing when these guys went to slicks, let them figure it out. But Denny, as a driver, made a good point talking about how that could be a little complicated, and they were still drying pit road, and it was still kind of a mess. They jumped a little bit. Talk about jumping starts. NASCAR did jump that start a little bit, trying to get everything done so they could race, and kind of missed out on the part of getting the track totally dry.
Yeah.
But overall, it was a fun race. I liked the strategy. And the strategy is what bit my favorite driver, was when Kyle Busch hit the wall and Bowman was just battling from being a lap down, and then Truex racing him like a jerk at the end of stage two. But no, I thought it was very interesting. It was one of the better races this year. Richmond has definitely earned the right to keep keep at least its Easter date. When it comes to the fall/summer race, we'll see. But
Kyle Busch, I mean, I've tried him a couple of different times talking fantasy wise, and I think I'm just done. I was kind of that way with Keselowski to a degree too, although I've currently got him sitting in my garage. But Kyle Busch is just like, man, is he ever going to figure it out this year? Because there have been a few races where he should have been at the top, and something always goes wrong for Kyle Busch.
Well, the problem for Kyle Busch recently is a lot of these short tracks. Richard Childress Racing has not had a great short track car this year, or I don't think last year they performed very well on short tracks either. I think this is a problem that's bigger than Kyle Busch. I think that Richard Childress Racing really needs to figure out what they're doing on these short tracks and kind of get it together. That being said, I don't want to spoil the picks too hard, but somebody did fade him this week in the picks, and I had him on my down. I fully expect Kyle Busch to get in the victory lane at some point this year. He is just that good. He's going to get there. It just might take some time because they're obviously going through some struggles as a team. And it's hard to get any valuable feedback when the driver of your teammate's car is Austin Dillon.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Let's talk about Martinsville. We come here next week, this weekend, to Martinsville. And are you excited about Martinsville? Like, what's your feelings on the track?
So the spring Martinsville race was a little underwhelming last year, but they did something to the tires in that fall race that made it super fun to watch. I mean, that battle between Denny and Blaney at the end last fall was just fantastic. Loved watching that. And I really hope we get more of that. I'm not sure if they're going to be going back to that Bristol tire they had just a couple of weeks ago. I think that would be the great move for Martinsville. It's always a high action kind of track. It's hard to pass, but the best guys figure it out. I'm really excited for Martinsville this week. The paperclip is always a fun track for a lot of people. And a lot of people have been really disappointed about how this race has looked in recent years with this new car. But that fall race, I think, was a strong sign in the right direction.
All right, so let's get into fantasy stuff. Now, I have really fallen off these last 2 weeks. I've had two
I haven't even gotten started.
Me and you are sitting, you're at fourth, I'm at fifth. We're not very far apart. We're about 30 points apart. Chris Prince leads the league right now. My dad that is
checks out
behind him, right there on him. And then the team finishing third was better than last. He had finished third in the first, I think, 4 weeks of the year, finally got a win this week, and was incredibly ecstatic about that. He comments on our Twitter and appreciate him following and listening to the show and being a part of the program or the league as well. We had two new guys jump in last week as well, or maybe 2 weeks ago. And so they're doing well. So let's talk about fantasy though and figure
out
how
are we going to get it right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. How are we going to get it right? So what do we have to do this week to get it right?
Again, Denny Hamlin is a really, really great pick here. This is one of his best tracks. He's probably the best racer at Martinsville in the whole Cup Series. He hasn't gotten the win since 2015 here, but he's only, I think I wrote here, let me go back and grab this. Denny Hamlin. In four of the last six races, he's been in the top five. So, strong candidate. I'm throwing Denny Hamlin in there. I'm forgetting about it. I already have two uses on him. We're going to make it three. Another one, Chase Briscoe. Quietly one of the better Martinsville drivers here. The last four races he's raced at Martinsville, he was in the inside the top 10. Another guy that I'm really confident in. Stuart Haas just seems to be back in some shape or form. They need to hit victory lane for me to really kind of pound the table that they're back, but I'm really confident in what they're doing. Chase Elliott, obviously, this is one of his better tracks. He had top five speed last week. Maybe he can get it together here. Brad Keselowski, another guy, we talked about him. He's figured it out on these short tracks, it seems. Although this is, I think, the first like flat track of the year. There's not a lot of banking there at Martinsville, obviously. So we'll see how different that is. And then some other guys you could consider Ross Chastain. He won here. Did he win here? No, I'm lying. There was obviously the wall ride where he was in the top five. Chris picked him. I don't know really what he's thinking there. And then in my garage, I have John Hunter Nemechek, just a guy that I think I could just put in there and kind of hope that the Toyota effect kind of goes to him.
So my philosophy this week is I got to score big. So I'm going to go with big names this week. Right now, I've got Christopher Bell, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, William Byron, and Joey Logano as my five. Now, the Hendrick guys, I'll wait again after qualifying comes through. I might throw Chase Elliott in for Byron, depending on where they're lining up at and things like that, because Elliott has looked a lot better here these last several races, too. I've got Keselowski in my garage because I haven't used him yet this season. And so if he's running well again, I might plug him in to save a driver because you only get 10 races with each driver.
I think I used him at Daytona and it didn't really work out for me that well.
That's the problem is he's I think I've had him in the lineup and I subbed him out at least in one race. So I never ended up using that thing on him. Fords, they seem to be trending right now, especially at Martinsville. A lot of people are high on the Fords going into this race. Blaney's a guy, again, if he just qualifies way better than Logano, I'll probably plug him in. I'm trying to save him a little bit more than I am Logano. So, but Logano's another guy who seems like these last couple races, he's been right there sniffing that victory, and it seems like he's pretty soon going to cross the finish line.
Oh, no, he told me to shove it last week.
Oh, did he?
Oh yeah, no, he told me to shove it when I faded him. Yeah.
Yeah. And he finished second. Yeah.
Never again. I have a knack for picking. I have a knack for fading guys who do well and picking guys who suck. So,
okay. So when we read your article with all the picks and everything, we want to go opposite of you.
Right. Expect a big day for Ty Gibbs.
Yeah. So you're fading Alex Bowman this week, hoping that it'll turn things around. For him.
God. Yeah. No, for sure. When it comes to Loudon, his most hated track in the whole Cup Series, when we go there, I'm fading him, and that'll be his first win there.
That's when he gets back on the stand. I love it. I love it. Caleb, tell everybody about where they can get your article at. Is it coming out every Thursday? Is that what it's doing right now?
We try to get it out every Wednesday. Chris, I believe, is feeling under the weather. And we weren't able to get that done. He doesn't have his power rankings out yet. I assume they'll be out by Friday at the latest. Find it on bellyupsports.com as usual. You can find me on Twitter at Caleb E-M-C-E-E. Find my Patriots podcast, the Foxborough Beatcast. Go on YouTube, look up Foxborough Beat. It's there. We just had a B-side show talking about WrestleMania this weekend. I don't know if you're into wrestling at all, maybe back in the day.
Not at all recently.
But we did that. We'll record the Patriots edition tomorrow while I'm snowed in. We're expected to get like a foot and a half of snow tomorrow up here in New England. Nice. That'll be awesome. And and three up, three down every week. That comes out on Tuesdays. I've nailed it down. That'll come out Tuesdays. And that's already out if you want to read about what happened at Richmond and if you need to get caught up. So that's all. That's all my stuff.
Give our listeners a quick take on New England Patriots sitting at number three. Are they trading out of it, or are they taking their quarterback at three?
I don't have any definitive facts for you outside of that. If we're staying at three, it's a quarterback. I don't know which one. I hope it's Jaden Daniels. I hope it's Drake May. J.J. McCarthy, listen, I'm open to it. Not my favorite guy on the board there at three. I think if you're going to take him, he's going to be sitting a year or two. But I personally, unless you love Drake May or Jaden Daniels or J.J. McCarthy, you trade down to 11. You take that three-pick haul from Minnesota, and you build your team that way. And you don't sweat the quarterback. This team is not a quarterback away. There's a lot of work to do on this offense there. So, yeah, that's what I would do.
And if I remember right, you're really hoping Bo Nix lands in New England.
I couldn't believe that you did that. I couldn't believe he is. You can pencil him in as a Denver Bronco at 12. I think you can. I think I think you can write in Sharpie that he is a Denver Bronco at 12.
Yeah, I had my first mock draft. I try to do at least three of these before the draft comes out. And I originally had Penix in that spot, 23, I think it was. I had them trade with Minnesota and taking Penix there. And I did a couple picks down from that. And I just been hearing a whole lot about Bo Nix, and I thought, I'm going to put Bo Nix.
I think you can guarantee he's a Denver Bronco. I think he can.
I wouldn't be surprised by that, for sure. He fits the mold there of Coach Payton, of course. And I mean, I think he's better than I think we remember him as Auburn Bo Nix, and that kind of taints the water a little bit.
He did get a little better at Oregon, but I don't know. I don't love what he brings to the table. I think he's a very limited kind of guy. I think he kind of maxes out as like a Gardner Minshew kind of guy, a fringe starter who can come in and, you know, look good in some spots, but do you want him starting 17 games a year? Not really.
Not really. That's a fair point. That's a fair point. All right. He's Caleb McChesney. We'll have him on again throughout the year talking NASCAR, especially, and maybe we'll get him on earlier in the show to talk some Patriots post-draft or pre-draft or something like that.
Would love to.
You can find all his stuff on, of course, Twitter and then bellyupsports.com as well. Caleb, thanks for your insight today on Martinsville, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Yes, sir. Caleb McChesney there from Belly Up Sports Racing. All right, folks, we sure appreciate you tuning in tonight. Make sure you follow us on social media at Sports Stove. That's on Twitter or Instagram. And then go visit RighteousFelon.com. Get yourself some jerky. I'm telling you, there's all kinds of great flavors there. So go find your new favorite flavor. Join the flavor revolution. RighteousFelon.com. Use the code STOVE15. You're going to get 15% off your purchase. I'm telling you, you cannot beat it. So we're going to be back next Sunday night. The Sports Stove Fantasy Baseball Show will be live at 8 o'clock. Actually, it won't be live. It's going to be pre-recorded next week. But nonetheless, it'll air at 8 o'clock right here on YouTube. And then Monday night, the plan is the Sports Stove local hour talking EKU sports. And then Wednesday night, we'll be right back here talking, again, NCAA championship, and Major League Baseball, and more NASCAR talk as well. Thanks to Dad for coming on, as he always does. Thanks to Caleb for coming on tonight as well. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Sports Stove Podcast. Until next time, we'll see you around the Sports Stove.